Welcome to Are You Game, a new gaming podcast about games on the table, on the tablet, and on television. My name is Lindsay, and I'm one of the hosts of this new podcast in which we're going to be talking about games, but not just video games. We're going to be talking about different kinds of games, both kind of board games and card games, as well as mobile games on for tablets and phones and phablets, and games on console and on PC. There are three of us hosting this new podcast. As I said before, my name's Lindsay, and I would describe myself as mainly a PC gamer and a board gamer. I'm joined also by Sean.
Hi, I'm Sean, and I would say, as well as a board gamer, I'm a mobile gamer.
And the third leg of our trio here is James.
Hi, this is James, and I would say that I'm mainly a PS4 gamer, but mobile games as well.
So this is a new podcast, and we've got a couple of things that we'd like to do in each podcast. First of all, we're going to get James to ask us a question. James, why don't you just get us right into it with your question?
Okay, so my question today is, I thought as it's a chance for listeners to get to know us, they haven't met us before, so I thought I'd ask you, what's your earliest gaming memory? So, Sean, what can you remember? If you go back in time into the dim recesses of your memory, what can you dig out for us?
What I could say on a podcast. My earliest gaming memory, thinking of this question, games actually play a lot of part in my memories. My earliest gaming memory is as a really young kid at my grandparents' house, watching my father and my grandfather play cribbage, which they used to do pretty much every Sunday. We went around there, which obviously cribbage is a card game. And, card games have kind of been instrumental in my life more than I would say any other games. But I can picture throughout my life, moments of games, like my first computer game, a Dragon 32 computer, Pac-Man cartridge. First time I played bridge as a result of losing a bet, and I became an absolute bridge addict. But throughout my whole life, and that's quite a lot of my life now in years, I think so much of my life has been centered around games, be it board games or console stations. A lot of my good memories are really game-based. Even silly things like in my mid-20s at 5 a.m. on a Boxing Day morning in the Czech Republic, my mate took a hat-trick in cricket, in EA Sports cricket, and we woke up the whole house, those kind of things. So it's a really interesting question, but I could probably fill a podcast with memories and games. But I can remember games from when I was a real young person.
Really?
Lovely memories.
I have to ask you, as I also come from a family where cribbage was played, did you ever actually learn to play cribbage? Did you take that rite of passage and become a cribbage player yourself?
I did, but unfortunately, I think my grandfather passed away before I could really get into him. But actually, it was a game I played a lot once I started living abroad, which I did for many years. I played it with friends. And I think that's probably why board games and card games play a big part of my life, because actually, as an expat for many years, they kind of, I think they became a social way. They became a way of bringing people together that is an excuse to be social. But nice. Anyway.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you. Okay, Lindsay, what about you?
Well, I too played cribbage. I remember learning that with my parents. But I thought of when I knew that this question was coming, I was desperately trying to remember this one game that I played, one of the first ever computer games that I played on the Mac, in fact. And I found it, and I was just looking at it, and I'm so desperate to go back into it again. It's called Balance of Power, and it was a 1985 game developed for the Mac by a guy called Chris Crawford. Awesome game. So this probably was what started my early love, continuing love of strategy games. So Balance of Power, you would play either the President of the United States or the General Secretary of the Soviet Union, and you'd have to lead the superpower for 8 years to maximize prestige. So it was like this kind of like old style Mac graphics, of the world's map, and you would play your turns, and you would, there'd be crises and incidents going around the globe, and you'd have to choose a response to each one. Like, you could try to resolve it diplomatically, military maneuvers, you could invest more in guerrilla armies and things like that. And it was quite, you know, lots of numbers, lots of spreadsheets. And I remember playing the hell out of this game. The one thing I do definitely remember about it was at the very end, if you get up to like DEFCON 1, so it's like you're constantly pushing things to getting closer and closer to nuclear war. But whoever does ignite nuclear war, the game ends. And it ends suddenly. So like the screen would suddenly go dark or white. I can't remember. And it was the message, I've just found it again here online. It said, I remember this message said, you have ignited a nuclear war. And no, there is no animated display of a mushroom cloud with parts of bodies flying through the air. We do not reward failure. And I just remember thinking, oh,
wow. You couldn't teach it tic-tac-toe then.
Yeah. Oh no, it was a great game, and I'm now thinking I want to try to find it again and play it again, see if it still holds up.
Your spreadsheets remind me of around the 80s as well, but my uncle, and it's like another memory, and that was the game Elite, which actually they've redone recently, but on the old BBC consoles, Elite was just the most wonderful space game ever. But anyway,
the precursor to Elite Dangerous.
Yeah, the original Elite. Okay. But I remember it was this kind of, the 1980s and spreadsheets just remind me of my uncle.
Oh, yeah.
Just really.
Oh, totally.
I would have been
playing this game probably not at launch. I would have probably been playing it 2 or 3 years afterwards. But great game. Bounce of Power. Right. Check it out again. Well, all right.
Jake, sorry.
Yeah, no, I hope it lives up to your expectations. There's always a risk. Okay, so for me, I think about, when I think about being young, I don't think of myself as being a particularly like a video gamer very much. I have really that strong memories of that. I mean, I remember board games that I had when I was a kid, you know, like real classic things like Game of Life, Go for Broke, and Guess Who, and things like this, you know, like real kind of obvious ones that I actually still have. But I haven't played them in a while, though, I have to say. Although I did download the Game of Life app the other day, and I actually really enjoyed it. It's really good. Wow. But
I don't think I've ever played Game of Life.
Neither have I, actually.
Yeah, you've got to get to the end and see how much money, you know, like basically who's the richest by the time you retire.
Isn't that Monopoly?
Sorry?
Isn't that Monopoly?
Well, it's much better than Monopoly. We all know Monopoly's a terrible game, right?
I can't stand Monopoly, yeah.
Oh, it's awful. So it's much quicker, it's funnier, and it's better. And I recommend the app version. It's actually pretty good. But and the other version, the opposite version of that, as well, I remember, would Go for Broke, which was basically the opposite. Like, you have to play your life, but by the end, you've got to see who's like the most in debt. So... that was kind nice of fun one. Game as well. But yeah.
That sounds easier.
Yeah, we
just spend lots of money.
There's one which is pre-economic crisis, and the other is post-economic crisis.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But when I actually think back on it, and I realise that I don't know why these memories faded, but I did have a Spectrum 48K, and I used to love playing that. And I used to, you know, in the days when there was such a thing as a British computer, I used to play games like Attic Attack. I remember I loved Attic Attack. Wow. And other games. And then I got an Amiga. So I used to play lots of games on the Amiga as well. And I mean, Sensible Soccer being probably the standard. What a game that was. That was some game.
Sensible Soccer. Is that the top-down? Is that a top-down one where they're all running around like crazy?
You had Kickoff before. And Kickoff was fantastic. But then it kind of got this upgrade, you know, like then someone came along with Sensible Soccer, and then that was a whole other level of...
Because started... Well, we should wait for later of this, but I started playing on the tablet Active Soccer 2, which they said is like a throwback to the Sensible Soccer days, which I never played. But you might want to check that out, because it's a similar look and feel, but I don't know the original.
But the funny thing is, so I kind of realized as I think about, actually, no, I must have been much more of a gamer than I realized. But I think the reason that I kind of have that selective memory is because when I was a teenager, I didn't really have a console or anything. So I never had a SNES or a PS1 or any of those kind of. And it was only when I was in my 20s, I actually bought a PS2. And since then, I've been playing more and more until now. I get to the point where I'm supposed to be giving up these childish things. And I actually find that the older I get, the more I want to spend time playing video games, more than I watch TV or watch films. Even.
I would say it's quite similar for that. I mean, for a lot of my life, it was board games and those kind of things, and they still play a big part. But as an adult, I bought my first proper console as an adult rather than as a kid. But I guess they didn't exist in quite the same way when I was a kid. Anyway, but it's something. Video games is something I've come to more later in life than growing up with, I guess. Apart from the staples like Pac-Man, so we cover a lot of ground between us then.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Thanks for your answers, guys. Back to you, Lindsay.
All right, well, I suggest we take a little break, and when we come back, we get into the meat of our podcast, Are You Game, with what game we'd like to talk about each in this episode. Welcome back to Are You Game? And what we're going to do in this part here is each of us in turn are going to talk about, and kind of we'll have a little roundtable discussion about a game that could be a table game, so a board game or a card game, a tablet game, which could be mobile, tablet, phablet, phone, whatever, or television, which could be console, and I suppose PC game that we have been playing or wanting to play or wanting to talk about recently, and what the pretext for this podcast is to give us a chance to talk about it. So who would like to begin? Shall I ask James, do you want to start us off then? What are you bringing to the podcast today?
Well, I'm going to talk about The Last of Us. Now, listeners may be wondering, why is it you're going to talk about a game that is neither kind of vintage nor brand new? And it's just a sort of a game that came out about, 3 years ago now, I guess? And everyone's played and, whatever. But it is my story with The Last of Us is a bit of an epic saga. And I want to share that story with you, because last weekend I completed The Last of Us. And it was a monumental achievement. Not because the game was particularly difficult, but let me tell you why. Okay, so when it first came out years ago, I got the game for my
It was 2013, wasn't it?
2013, for PS3. There you go. Right? So it's 4 years ago. So I got it then for my PS3, and I started to play the game, and I enjoyed it a lot, but for various reasons, I couldn't play for a while. There was a big gap, and then I thought, you know, I like this game so much, I'm going to wait, because I want to play it properly. I don't want to, pick it up again in the middle of the story and everything. So I'll wait. So I waited probably, I think, about a year or so. And then I thought, okay, right, now is time. I'm going to play the game again. So I start playing again. And I was getting quite close to the end when I paid a visit back to the UK, because I live abroad. So I went back to the UK and I saw my parents. And my parents, bless them, bought me a PlayStation 4 for my birthday, because I am a child. And and on that PS4, it came with The Last of Us, the remastered version. And I thought,
I thought,
I've got to play that, you know, I've got to. So I decided that I would wait a bit.
You have to wait for the memory to fade.
And then I'm going to play it again on PS4 with the remastered soundtrack and better graphics and everything. I thought, well, this game is worth it. It's so good, you know. So I waited until a couple of months ago. And then I thought, okay, now is the time. I'd forgotten about it, but I have to finish The Last of Us. So I sat down and I was playing it. And this time I got even further into the game. And then I'm sitting there in front of the TV on a Sunday afternoon. And then I just hear this pop noise, and the machine goes completely dead, and I think, oh no, what's happening, what's going on? And what happened was that a fuse went, basically, right?
Save game was corrupted.
No, it wasn't. I mean, that's that would have been perfect, right? That would have, because the story would not have ended. I would have spent a month just like staring at the wall furiously, going, why? Why? No, save game was fine.
Okay. So, and so then you finished it, what, just last weekend?
So I finished, I finally, it took me 4 years, but I finally finished The Last of Us last weekend. So I'm in, I'm still in this like, normally when you finish a game, you know, you get that glow. When you finish like a big epic story, you're like, I did it, you know? I've got that, but like times 10, because I'm like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it took you, basically it took you the same amount of time to finish The Last of Us as it takes many people to finish like a university degree.
Yes, or indeed to make The Last of Us 2, which is about to come out.
Right? Bachelor, exactly.
Oh, I was about to say, is there a sequel about to come out? Then.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So but I think, you know, when you said you got the game and you didn't finish it until later, I think there are lots of people, myself included, who don't get games on launch. I don't think we're going to be one of these podcasts that talk about the newest, latest shiny thing.
Definitely. If their listeners really want to hear reviews of the newest games, I think they might be
disappointed. Out of here. Right? You don't belong here. You'll hate this. You probably hate it already. As soon as James said The Last of Us, you were like, I'm out of here. All right, nice.
So is there a huge hole in your life now then, James?
Well, isn't that the way whenever you finish a game, you know, like, and then you just move on to the next one? So,
not with that game especially.
And there's a lot to talk about that game as well, because that game is, I don't know if either of you have played it, but it is a brilliant game.
Well, actually, I just played Last of Us this year as well for the first time, because I don't do much console gaming, and my kids finally got a secondhand PlayStation 3, so we played The Last of Us, and it was a first time for me, but as I said, I don't do a lot of console gaming, but I agree, it is a spectacular game.
And there's something about...
I'm the odd one out then.
Yeah, there's something about it, I think, in terms of narrative, which is really like advanced, you know, within gaming. It's really sort of pushing the idea of how the narrative works, how it affects you when you're watching it, in the way that, you know, I think that game is better than most, you know, TV series that I've watched. Like there are moments in the game where you feel like that kind of sucker punch of emotion where you're like, can't believe.
Yeah.
There's one moment around two-thirds of the way in, which I'm not going to describe, obviously.
It's just like, avoid spoilers.
No spoilers. But there's about two-thirds of the way in where you you meet some other people in the game, and there's a moment where it really, it's a real killer, that moment. And you don't normally get that. Even in brilliant games, it's rare that you get that kind of emotional heft, you know?
Yeah. So you'd say, having finished it just last week, you'd say if anyone hadn't played it, it's a worthwhile investment of time and money.
I think if you like those kind of narrative, if you're interested in more narrative storytelling kind of games, then I think it's one of the best, if not the best that I've ever played for that aspect. It's superb, and the gameplay is great, and there are collectibles and, you know, things to kill and all that kind of stuff. You know, as well, it's not just narrative driven, but the fact that you can see that they've made a game where the narrative is at the core of it, I think is, and the only other game I would say that is as strong as this, I think, would be maybe Red Dead Redemption, which I thought also had a brilliant storyline as well.
I got bored of Red Dead.
I think Last of Us didn't drag in parts in the same way that sometimes Red Dead Redemption did.
Oh no, but I can't believe you're saying that's heresy. It's one of the top five games of all time.
I agree that it is, but again, not being a console gamer, but I would agree with Sean, occasionally it dragged. Sean, let's move on to you then. What are you bringing to the podcast today?
I don't think I'm bringing quite such an emotional story to the podcast today, but I as a mobile gamer, I like games you can obviously The Last of Us, you those kind of games you invest a lot of time in, and I'm at the moment I don't have time to sit and invest into games so much, so I quite like games you can drop in and out of, and I realize that a lot of the games I play are kind of like defend the tower goal, defend yourself kind of games, like those kind of things where you can drop in, meet somebody online, play the game and pop out again. So with that, I'm actually going to go for a virtual reality game. So I have a Daydream headset, which goes with the Google Pixel phone. And the game I'm currently playing and really loving just for the escapism of it, it's called Wands. And exactly like you think it is, like in, as in the magician's wands. And it's right. a really simple game. And it's one of those games that really shows off what virtual reality can do in a very simple way. So you put your glasses on and you go into the world of wands, and essentially it's a dueling game. You choose your spells, you go online, you find another wizard, and you battle by casting spells at each other until one of you is dead.
And that's it's multiplayer. It's multiplayer.
Oh yeah. That's actually one of the drawbacks about it because obviously it's multiplayer, but you can kind of it's not a massive online game. Say like Warcraft would be where you go on and you will find millions of other players.
So what's the wait time for it?
Actually, they've just updated it, and I was in it just before I came on the podcast actually, and I battled for about half an hour with no problem. I've had it, it was a game when it came out, and I thought it got really good reviews, but it was quite expensive for a VR game. Well, I say quite expensive, probably £5 or so. But the problem I found with mobile games is that. You're going to spend money on them and they might be not very good. So £5 is a lot of money, I think, for a mobile game. Okay. That's untested, in my opinion. Because you can't really check. It's all right watching screenshots or watching a video, but virtual reality is something else, Yeah. So anyway, it was on offer a couple of months or so ago for a couple of quid. So I thought, I've heard good things about it. I'll get it. So back at that point, it was you kind of went in and you were twiddling your thumbs, walking around thinking, where is everybody? But clearly over the last few weeks, the game's had a major upgrade, so now it plays in a different way. There are new environments with it. Now, of course, there is a mode which actually they've just changed to what they call casual dueling, but there's a mode called friends. And so if you did have friends that had the similar headsets, you could all meet up and play in that way. But so when I first got it, you went online, you were sort of twiddling your thumbs thinking, where's it going to appear? But now it's not. And again, I've gone in, you might wait around for a couple of minutes for somebody to appear, but generally somebody appears. And the game is really simple. You put the headset on. Once you're in the game, you choose the spells that you want to take in with you. There is a practice kind of room where you can go and fire spells to get to see what they do. And then you basically open a portal and you're transported to, it might be a prison kind of thing. They're all kind of medieval kind of look, or the new realm is Eastern. And you basically, once you're in the game, once somebody appears, you move around the game by casting a teleport spell. So you teleport around, trying to hide and fight. When you see the person, you fire spells at them. And in typical kind of these game fashions, there's a leaderboard and whatever. I'm not very good at it, I must admit. I've only ever won a few bouts. But it's just good. It's just really good escapist fun. You put 2 or 3 minutes in a bout.
How long would you say Wands is, like, from time in to waiting to battling and done? Like, how long would you say?
It depends how good you are, I guess, to how long it is. I mean, if you get there doesn't seem to be a waiting system, so you could get drawn against somebody that was very good, and they kind of kill you quite quickly. The game I've just been in, we were quite well weighted. And we played for about 6 minutes before one of us died. Then you've got the option of immediately rematching the same person and starting again, and or coming out and going back in again. And it kind of records your progress through the game.
So I was wondering how well does it use the VR aspect of it? I mean, is it particularly good in VR, or do you think it would make much difference if it wasn't in VR?
Oh no, very much makes a difference, because you feel like you're in a proper structure or a proper building, and you are turning your head up, down, around and about, looking for where the person could be, because they could teleport behind you. So you have to swivel around very quickly. So there are a number of teleports all over the thing which you can jump to. So I found myself landing, and then I tend to play it on my office chair, so I've just got casters on it, so I could swing around very quickly to see if the person's behind me or not.
It's a great image. It's a fantastic image for us.
Would you say does it kind of scratch a Harry Potter itch?
In that sense, it very much so. Harry Potter, but perhaps with a slightly more adult look. I would say the character that if you're when you see your image or you see the opponent's image, you probably more look like something like more of Voldemort or maybe of the Assassins and Assassin's Creed kind of look.
Okay.
With it.
Okay. But now you're talking my language.
But yeah, I mean, it's that simple. There's no overall goal. Your goal is to beat the person in front of you. That's it, and it's just fun. But I find with VR, I like VR. I like playing with VR and seeing what it can do in a number of things. You know, but some VR games don't have a lot of motion, and you sit there and you're just okay. This is that. And, you know, you move your head around with it. But this one feels like you're immersive, and you know, and you are. In that environment as well as you can be wearing a headset, and obviously the Daydream comes with a hand controller, so you the hand controller in your hand is manifests itself as a wand on the screen, so it does feel the same way in that sense. But yeah, no, I'm quite surprised, and I think there's a lot of potential, because I think it's not just on Daydream, but as more people kind of get into VR and it becomes more popular, mm-hmm. that I think the game can build. But it's a good 10 minutes, you know. Yeah. I want to do something for 10 minutes to take my mind away from what I'm doing, or play a fun game, which I think is how we often play games, you know, around our world.
And I think we'll be coming back to VR more than once, won't we, in future episodes. I know I will.
Well, yes, so. Especially since I'm a VR virgin, so I'll be listening for those, and maybe during the course of this podcast I'll finally play a VR game. Anyway, shall I move on and tell you what I brought to the podcast today?
Let's hear it.
All right. Okay. So this was not a video game. I thought, and true to our, you know, we decided to go. The podcast is about table, tablet, and television gaming. So I brought a tabletop game. I played with some friends a couple of weekends ago at on a gaming night called Secret Hitler. Have either of you guys heard of Secret Hitler?
Only because of you.
But, yeah, and just the name makes me immediately want to play it.
Oh, yeah. No, well, this is great. Okay, Secret Hitler was, first of all, it was a Kickstarter project, and then they were still waiting for it to get designed, so they put a print-and-play version to let people start playing it while they were waiting for it to get printed or distributed or something or other. So I got the print-and-play version, which had the rules and the cards that I printed off and brought. So it's a little kind of card game that you have to have a minimum of 5 people. So that could be problematic. You can't play with less than 5 people, and it works based on a trader mechanic. So the setting is that you are all it's based in 1930s Germany, and players are secretly divided into teams, liberals and fascists. And the fascists are only known to each other. So this is
already
a bit like this.
It's already brilliant, Lindsay. It's already brilliant.
So this is, if you've played a game like Werewolves or Mafia, you'll know that what's called the betrayal mechanic or the traitor mechanic. So everyone has to put their head down, and then the fascists look up while everyone else has their head time to acknowledge each other. And if you have a bigger group, Hitler, there's always a Hitler, but in a bigger game, Hitler doesn't know who the fascists are, although the fascists will know who Hitler is. In our game, there was one fascist and Hitler, so they knew who each other were. And then what happens is it goes in rounds. In each round, a president has to be a president is nominated, and they have to elect the chancellor. Then the president and the chancellor, I'm kind of going quickly through the rules here, but the president and the chancellor then enact a policy together through a series of drawing cards and discarding cards until there's one card left. And that policy can be a liberal policy or a fascist policy. And the fascists win if they get, the liberals win if they get 6 liberal policies passed, and the fascists win, I think, if they get 5 or 6 fascist policies passed. And so what you want to do, or the liberals also win if they kill Hitler. Now, the way to kill Hitler, so either you have to make sure that liberal policies are being passed each time, but of course a fascist is, if they become president or chancellor, is going to try to pass a fascist policy. So that's hard. But in the earlier stages of the game, the liberals can actually benefit from some of the early fascist policies because it enables them to check the allegiance of a player, or indeed later on it enables them to kill a player outright. So that's when a liberal player benefits from a fascist policy of executive action executing someone because
execute people willy-nilly.
Well, yeah, every turn you get to execute someone as the president. And if you're a liberal, you want to try to execute Hitler. Because then you win the game. But if
so
you
if
make a mistake,
if you're executed, are you not playing the game anymore?
No, you're kicked out. The game lasts around 20 minutes, 20-25 minutes, with lots of talking. Because what happens is, as the policies are enacted, that's where the lying comes in. So if I'm a fascist and I enact a fascist policy, I will be lying and saying I had no option. The cards that I was given were all fascist policies, so I had to enact one of them. Whereas, because you'll be given cards at random and then you choose which one to enact.
Sure.
It's a little bit more complex than that, but it's once you get it, it's very easy to pick up and play. And so the first game, you kind of figure it out how it does. And then the second game, because you'll always want to play a game right afterwards, is where things get really good, really good. So we played around 10 games of that. I think we played for like 3 or 4 hours around our table with drinks and, the shouting got louder and louder. There's even an app which does a bit of narrating for you. So like there's a free app that goes with the game with a narrator reading out scenes for you so that you can kind of get right in the mood of it and everything. It's awesome. Wow. So I would definitely recommend it, even more so that there's a print and play version so you can try it out before buying it. The only drawback is you need 5 people minimum to play this game with.
You say minimum of 5. So is there a maximum?
Yeah. Maximum is, let me just check, I think the maximum is 8 people.
Okay.
I think it might be a bit more than that. I think
let me just check here. I think it's 8 or 9 people.
How does it compare then, do you think, to other games of a similar style, you know, like Mafia and so would you say
is it better or less worse, complicated, you know, like, I think it's, well, the setting makes it really good, and the aesthetic of the whole game is all that kind of 1930s type thing. Yeah. So that and just the name of the game, as you said, you know, the whole thing just fits it in perfectly. Also, the kind of whole idea that you're enacting fascist or liberal policies, certainly playing it these days, there was lots of kind of trash talk around the table and stuff like that. There's lots of sort of echoes of what's happening in the world today. And
it's not really played for escapism then.
No. Although the policies, they don't say what the policies are. It just says you've enacted a fascist policy or you've enacted a liberal policy.
Yeah,
so
and in fact,
it doesn't go that far.
If you look on their website, they have FAQs and it says one of the questions is, I don't think there's anything funny or cool about fascism. Who can I complain to? And then the answer is President Donald J. Trump, 725 Fifth Avenue, New York. If you live in the US, you can also text your address to this number to get contact information for your elected representatives. So I think a brilliant response, right? Brilliant.
I'd never seen the FAQs, but the other aspect to it. I mean, it benefits. I played a lot of these kind of games, and it benefits from having the kind of tight like the closed in kind of situation. You know, everyone can get into roles a bit easier. I think it also adds that extra dynamic that Hitler could be killed, because lots of these other games, for example, there's another one I played called The Resistance, where you're either resistance fighters or you're government spies, and you just have to kind of like avoid and kind of make a mission fail. This adds an extra level of complexity, which plays out quite simply, but is really quite nice. However, that being said, we played, and even at the end of like playing 10 games, one of the guys at the table at the end said, I had no idea what I was doing the whole time. So maybe it isn't for everybody.
Is that him or is that the game?
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's not just him, because he had never played these kind of games where you have to lie, and games like Mafia or Werewolves. I think that Werewolf can become quite a lot more complex and works probably much better with like a group of 15 or 20 people. I've played that online. This is better for a smaller group.
Will it stand
the test of time? I don't know.
Yeah, this has a maximum of 10 players, this game.
Okay, maximum of 10 players. But you can find it on Kickstarter, or I think there is a website now. Anyway, if you just type in Secret Hitler card game or Secret Hitler game,
it's secrethitler.com. So.
All right. Well, there you go. I was looking at the Kickstarter page.
Yeah, there you go. Sounds great. Right. Can't wait to play.
All right. Okay. Well,
you
guys.
You did sound very excited by your Secret Hitler there, James.
I think the premise is so brilliant. I just think that's, you know. Yeah, it's a great premise
actually,
for a game.
And they've already there's been I think I saw on Steam they've already started making a version, like a fan version. It's set in the Star Wars universe, of course, and it's called Secret Palpatine, which I think is just,
I mean, come on, you awesome. Know, who's not going to want to play that, you know?
I think that brings us to an end of our first episode, of our pilot episode. Guys, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks. So. I've got a new game to go chase out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds, yeah, and I it's given me the itch. I feel the need to go and sit down in front of my PS4 now. So.
But you've not got your book. You've got no game to play, James. You can't sit down in front of it.
Sean, there's always another game to play. Always another game to play.
Okay. Happy gaming then.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, listeners. And we'll talk again next time.